Good morning. Welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanfer. Less than a week after the defection of State Senator Dean Johnson, the DFL has bagged another Republican. This time, State Auditor Judy Dutcher has announced that she is switching parties from Republican to DFL, saying that the DFL is more accepting of divergent points of view. While some Republican insiders accuse Johnson of sour grapes after he lost a leadership position 2 years ago, it will be harder to take any swipes at Dutcher, a moderate who supports abortion rights and who was one of the highest elected Republican office holders in the state. What does the move mean for the Republicans, who not so long ago were crowing over the defection of St. Paul Mayor Norm Coleman from DFL to Republican? We'll find out today as we talk to Ron Ebensteiner. He's the chair of the Republican Party here in Minnesota. And to Sarah Janicek. She's co-editor of the newsletter Politics in Minnesota. She's founder of Politics in Minnesota, The Directory. They're both here in the studio. I want to thank you both for joining us today.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ron Ebensteiner, I want to start with you. You were quoted as saying that you were baffled by the news of Judy Dutcher switching parties.
Yes, I was, from the standpoint that I did have lunch with her a number of months ago. We sat down. We had a very nice lunch conversation about her role in the party, her future. She had told me at the time that she would remain a Republican. She was that there was a lot of conversation out there that she may be flirting with the Reform Party or the Democratic Party, but she said she was a Republican, always has been, and will remain so.
So what do you think prompted the change?
Well, I'm not sure, and that's the point that baffled me, quite honestly. As you'll recall, she was unanimously endorsed at the last Republican convention. She had the full support of the Republican Party behind her, and she was always featured. We tried to give her a lot of play a meaningful role in the party as well as the other statewide constitutional office holders. So I really don't know why she made the switch.
Sarah Janicek, you are a moderate, centrist, pro-choice, Republican female, got a lot in common with Judy Dutcher. So is this just as baffling to you?
It is baffling and it's disappointing. It's always disappointing when someone gives up the good fight. And much of the litany of complaints that Judy had about the party, I could ascribe those to a lot of pro-life people who feel they've been snubbed by the party as well.
Well, you could point out Dean Johnson, for instance.
Right, but on the other, I can also point out Mary Kiffmeyer. Many of Judy's complaints stem from the campaign of 1998, and the rest of the ticket, the other five officers that ran with Norm Coleman, all complained the whole election cycle that Norm dominated everything and they were all slighted.
Well, I think we should point out that Judy Dutcher was invited to be on Mid-Morning today, and she declined. Not going to stand in her stead, of course, but just from reading the newspapers, she did pull together a string of complaints that actually didn't have that much to do necessarily with that election. For instance, there was, and this has been in all the papers, her disappointment over the party's lack of reaction to the Minneapolis school board candidate who took out the ad describing contemporary America as being akin to pagan, quotes around it, Africa. that sure sounds like a blow there, a misstep or something. Ron Ebensteiner?
Well, Judy and I did have a conversation about that when that did occur. And, you know, when there are issues within the Republican Party, I like to resolve them inside the party. And I was also very disappointed with that ad that Judy Lavoie put out. And it was inappropriate ad, and I expressed that in the papers as well as...
I'm going to stop you because Judy Dutcher would say that she was the first person to make public comment that the executive director of the party didn't do enough about that.
Well, I think that is her view of things, but I don't think you have to put out press releases and make a show of it when something like this occurs. And simply as I immediately called a number of the people in the 5th District, and I wanted to get to the bottom of the story. And I did not put out a big press release. I didn't think that was appropriate. When there are issues that need to be dealt in the Republican Party, I like to do it without a lot of fanfare, and that's what I hope to accomplish. Now, she elected to put out a press release and be very visible about this, and you know, that's her prerogative. I just felt a little different tact was more helpful and more productive.
Ron can't say it because he's party chair, but the strategic decision was made that Renee Lavoie was best left alone, that basic PR 101, just let the story go, don't make a big issue out of it.
How about the fact that... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Ron.
Well, the other thing that that Judy mentioned in her press release or in one of the interviews, that she was opposed to school choice or vouchers.
Whoa, and man, the spin. Whew, my head's spinning here. I believe she said she was opposed to school vouchers, not necessarily school choice.
Well, vouchers, and a lot of people use vouchers and school choice in the same context, and so but I can't imagine that being an extreme position, as she tried to characterize it. If you know that Arne Carlson, the former governor, was a big advocate for school choice, he made that central in his administration during his term as governor, and I think school choice is an issue that is very mainstream. It really addresses the needs of low-income parents to send their kids to a school that best fits their needs, and I think that's where most Minnesotans are.
Much of my disappointment over her decision to do this stems from the image it leaves us with, and that image so contrasts with reality. In the last 10 years, we have seen Republican governance in two places. We've seen it in the governor's office, in Arne Carlson, and we've seen it the last year in the newly elected House Republican majority. Neither the governor nor the House Republicans pushed any of the issues that Judy cares deeply about. Last year, the House Republican majority put out a 10-point plan. School vouchers and abortion were not on that list. It was a very mainstream, cut crime, reduce taxes kind of list.
Well, you know, what's interesting here is when, you know, for instance, you mentioned Arne Carlson. It sounds like if Judy Dutcher had a lot in common with someone, it would be Arne. Well, Arne's a Republican, but he wasn't necessarily of the party. I mean, there were some very public battles there. So do we have a perception problem going on here? I mean, is Judy Dutcher an Arne Carlson Republican? And if you're an Arne Carlson Republican, then you're not going to be part of the Republican Party in Minnesota?
Well, I think there is a little bit of a perception problem that the Republican Party has, and I'm not sure what it is, but I've been a state party chair now for 6-7 months. I've met a lot of very nice people in the Republican Party, and I've had the chance to travel throughout the state and talk to a lot of different folks, and what people are most concerned about is the issue of tax reduction. It is budget restraint. It is school reform and rural development, crime prevention. These are the issues that resonate within the Republican Party. And as Sarah said, the House Republicans in the last legislative session have really demonstrated what the Republican Party is all about. And they addressed all of these issues. And that is where most Republicans are. And I think sometimes perception does not line up with reality.
Or is it possible that caucus politics and actual governance don't line up? For instance, Dean Johnson, talking about the fact that he was leaving because he was so sick of what happened in his own caucuses.
Absolutely, and I'm so sorry these defections went the wrong way for my party in the last week, because this happens in both parties. The reality is the party organizations are vastly different than the elected official organizations. The party organizations in both parties, if you're a Tim Penny or you're a Doug Johnson and you're pro-life, you cannot get endorsed by the state DFL party. The same is true for our Republican Party. If you are pro-choice, you cannot get endorsed. On the other hand, when people are elected, they tend to work on other more mainstream issues, and those issues the abortion issue does not define electoral politics.
Well, I'm glad you brought up both parties, because I have to say that are we perhaps getting to a point, Ron Ebensteiner, where what we have are parties where the actual party politics are so polarizing that you are seeing people defecting simply in their search for a center?
Well, I think that's part of the reason why Jesse Ventura was elected, quite honestly. I do think, as Sarah said, that both parties suffer from this. And what we have to do, and what I'm working very hard in doing, is bringing more people into the Republican Party to attend the caucus, to get involved, not only to get involved financially, but devote some of their time as well. And I'm reaching out to women's group and to minorities, business folks, rural folks, as best I can. And there's only so many hours in a day, but I'd love to do a better job of that. And I think that if we do reach out and really communicate that we want a big tent Republican Party, we might be more successful.
I want to know this. Did you let her go, Judy Dutcher?
Did I let her go?
Just the party. Did the party let her go? The reason I ask this is I was reading in the newspaper about how you had lunch 6 months ago and you said she wasn't returning your phone calls in recent months. Boy, I don't know. Basic human psychology. Someone doesn't return your phone call, you have a problem. You go over and you knock on the door with a dozen roses and say, I love you, I'm sorry, what did I do?
Well, probably I should be more of the warm and fuzzy type, but again, there's only so many hours in a day. And I did have lunch with her, and she made it very clear to me that she was going to remain in the Republican Party. I did see her very briefly at the state convention here a couple of months ago. We did not have a chance to talk because it was very busy that day. I did put in a phone call to her, and I told her assistant that I wanted to get together for lunch again, and just to keep in touch, and I did not receive a phone call back from her.
So, Sarah, did they let her go?
No, I think she chose to go, and she's not been shy about talking to the Reform Party as well. This was a carefully orchestrated resignation from the Republican Party. She did hire a media consultant in the effort to get 2 days of media out of this deal, and she did. So I think to a large degree, this is about what Judy Dutcher is interested in the future, and that perhaps it would be easier for her to run for higher office in the DFL.
We are talking to Sarah Janicek. She's co-editor of the newsletter Politics in Minnesota, founder of Politics in Minnesota, The Directory. And we're talking to Ron Ebensteiner. He's Minnesota chair of the Republican Party. We're talking about the two recent defections from the Republican Party to the DFL here in Minnesota. We'd like to know what your political read is. What's your reaction to the decisions by two leading Republican office holders to make the switch? Are you a Republican who would like to respond to the criticisms that have been leveled at your party as a result of the recent defections? Do you agree with Senator Dean Johnson and State Auditor Judy Dutcher's charges that the GOP has moved too far to the right? It's 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities, maybe you have an idea that both parties have moved too far in one degree or another. It's 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Ron Ebensteiner.
Yes, I think, though, we have to keep in mind one thing, though. The defection of Dean Johnson, I think, is much different than the defection of Judy Dutcher. With Dean, that was not as surprising for me. Dean was out of step with his fellow colleagues in the state Senate. Dean was opposed to tax cuts. He was opposed to the budget restraint that the House Republicans initiated. He's also opposed to school reform. So on many policy issues, he was out of step with the Republican Party and with his colleagues in the Senate. And so therefore, and as you also know, that he was not reelected as the minority leader, and he felt personally hurt by that. So if a person doesn't believe in tax reductions and budget restraint, school reform, and all of those things that Republicans feel very deeply about, then it's probably in his best interest, and for the party that for that matter, to for him to switch to the other side, just like Norm Coleman did when he became mayor of St. Paul. He was elected as a Democrat, but after he was mayor for a couple of years, he decided that his policies resonated better with the Republicans, and so therefore, if you're going to govern as a Republican, why not be a Republican? And that's the same case with Dean Johnson. With Judy Dutcher, I don't know of what her problem was in terms of not feeling welcome in the Republican Party.
I'm going to throw a quote in here because she says, it was like walking into a room and I was holding my breath. Let me make my speech and then I can go. That sounds uncomfortable.
Well, I don't know why she would feel that way, quite honestly. We always try to make her very welcome. But I think if she doesn't believe in the issues that are very near and dear to the Republican Party, like tax reductions and spending restraints. And if those are the issues that she feels uncomfortable with, and then probably the other party is better suited for her.
She hasn't identified those as the issues she feels uncomfortable with.
Well, I don't know what the issues are, you know, quite honestly, that she felt she said that to me as well, that she felt uncomfortable. But, you know, I can't make her comfortable other than the fact that I can give her, as party chair, a platform and welcome her into the party, but she's got to do it on her own.
On that point, I don't know. I do know that the other folks that she campaigned with in those situations that she's referring to were unhappy with her because they thought she didn't carry her weight in the campaign. She didn't. She showed up to one parade, stuff like that. Back to Dean Johnson just for a minute, if we can. His situation was vastly different. The Kandy, Ojai County Republican Organization was intent on doing personal attacks on Dean. They liked to submit letters to the editor. They gave him a very hard time, and he just didn't, with his wife having been diagnosed with cancer, just chose to get rid of that kind of grief in his life and didn't want to deal with it anymore. The other piece for Dean is in his lifetime, the Republicans have never controlled the Senate, and he got a substantial committee chairmanship out of this in the Senate Transportation Budget Division.
Isn't it also possible that the Republican Party in Dean Johnson's lifetime changed in Minnesota, that we went to a very different sort of Republican Party?
Yeah, Catherine, I mean,
otherwise, Arnie, Carl, I mean, I keep coming back to Arnie as this shining example of there were two kinds of Republican parties.
Right, and I feel like I could be saying the same thing I said 15 years ago. What happened was the moderates gave up and the conservative activists chose to go to all the meetings it takes to require to become party officers. And I'm of the belief, I'm unhappy with this, but the world belongs to those that show up. And the moderates simply gave up.
We're going to go to Richard in Minneapolis. Richard, yeah. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello. Yeah, hi. I hear an attack by the two speakers against Judy Dutcher, and I have one question. Whose fault is it that she left the Republican Party?
Richard, this is Sarah Janicek here. I'm not criticizing Judy Dutcher, except to the extent that what I just said, she gave up the good fight. I think if she felt that she was a lifelong Republican, I had wished that she would have stayed to fight the good fight and try to change the party.
Well, but that's rhetoric. Whose fault is it that she left?
Does there have to be a fault, Richard?
Well, it's amazing to me. How many statewide officials do the Republicans have? And were the Republicans ignorant of her views and interest possibly in changing party or her concerns? And did they try to address those concerns? You ain't got a lot of state officers.
I just want to turn. We had some technical difficulty, and Ron Ebensteiner couldn't hear Richard's first comment. He wants to know, he said that it sounded like you are blaming Judy Dutcher for letting go. He wants to know why you let her go. Is that a fair summation,
well,
there, Richard?
Well, I mean, they only have one state officer, and I'm wondering, you know, I believe, yes, someone's at fault. Did they do anything to try to accommodate her interests? Because in the articles I've read, she was not introduced at various gatherings. She was put in the background. She was not treated as the state officer she was. Now the chair has said otherwise, which is complete contradiction to what the newspaper article said, and I wasn't there, so I don't know. But my question to the chairman is, whose fault is it that she left your party?
Well, I don't know if it's anybody's fault other than the fact that people change their minds. As I mentioned earlier, you know, Norm Coleman left the Democratic Party. And across the country for the last 10 years, there's been a lot of party switching nationally. And so people have a right to change their opinions and their minds and their party affiliations. So I don't know if there should be any finger pointing. But I will say one thing, though. I've only been state party chair here for the last 7 months. And during my tenure, the last 7 months, I tried to be as inclusive as possible. In the previous election, I was Norm Coleman's finance chair. And I did not attend every party function as finance chair for the Coleman campaign. But I did attend a number of them. And in every instance that where I was present and where Judy was present, there was never any intention to slight her. She was always included in the program. So I got to tell you, just based on my experience, I did not see party leaders trying to exclude her from the process. Now, maybe that happened, but it certainly, I was not aware of it, or I did not observe it.
Sarah Janicek, quickly.
One thought to ponder. When Norm Coleman left the DFL, the focus was on Norm Coleman. It's been interesting to watch the defections of these two. The focus has been on the GOP.
Well, don't you think that part of that is because there were two in a week? We didn't have two Norms in a week making that switch.
On the other hand, I would have to say that Norm was a much higher profile candidate at that mayor of St. Paul.
We're going to go to Tara in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I just have a comment in that I really don't blame her for leaving to go to the Democratic Party. I'm actually very much for a lot of the policies of the Republican platform, mostly regarding fiscal matters. However, for me, they've become way too inflexible regarding matters of religion and personal choices, such as...
Tara, put your mouth closer to the phone.
Sure.
They've
become much too inflexible in regarding personal matters, such as religion and homosexuality. And I can understand how uncomfortable it is to try to discuss or bring up issues to interacting with conservatives. I myself have felt really uncomfortable because they seem very... much inflexible, and I think that it's really understandable that she feels more comfortable maybe in the Democratic Party, where they're much more open to diverse points of view than typically Republicans are.
A couple of points as the moderate here in the studio. Important distinction. The Republican Party is not religiously intolerant. We have high-profile folks of all religions involved in our party. And as the moderate, I couldn't agree with the caller more. I really wish that in our lifetimes the social issues would go away and we would concentrate on what government is supposed to do.
Well, I think there's more tolerance in the Republican Party over this whole issue of abortion than there is in the Democratic Party. There is a real litmus test in the Democratic Party that if you're pro-life, you will not get heard. Tim Penny will be running for the U.S. Senate by all indications. Here recently he threw his hat in the ring. He will not be endorsed by the Democratic Party, and because he is pro-life. We've had pro-choice candidates running on the Republican side from time to time, Arnie Carlson being one, Judy Dutcher being another, and there are other pro-choice candidates in the Republican.
I got to go back though to Arnie Carlson. He was not identified with that party.
However, well, Catherine, he did before he ran. The craziness that happened in 1990, Arnie Carlson. I was there. He spent a lot of time with party activists, 5-6 years, trying to get their support and their endorsement.
We're going to go to Paul in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a big distinction between Coleman's defection and versus Dutcher and Johnson. With respect to Coleman, he has a history of changing his views. He went from an extreme radical to somebody who's the darling of the Chamber of Commerce.
Paul, I got to stop you right there. You know, if he had made that switch in a month, you might have a point. But he made the switch from, like, college to a man in his 40s.
You've
got to allow people that.
Oh, yes, but I didn't finish.
Okay.
I said that Coleman shifted his views. Now, you can say over a lifetime or over a month, whereas Dutcher and Johnson had consistent views, and it's the Republican Party which has moved.
I disagree with that. I went to St. Thomas College, and I remember one of our professors came in for a class, and in fact it was a former senator of Minnesota, Eugene McCarthy, and he said that when you're young, and you have to be an idealist, and then after you get a little experience, you address the realities of the world, and then as you get older you become more conservative. So people always have a tendency to change their views over time, and when I was in my college days, My views were quite different than they are today. And the reason they are different is because of the experience that I have gathered over the last 20 years and the realities of life. And so therefore, your comments about Norm is, I think, inappropriate.
Well, I also went to St. Thomas as an instructor, and Norm is quite rightly accused of expediency first.
Well, I think you could also label that with Judy. Judy had indicated, if you read the Star and Tribune report this morning by Dane Smith, the very last sentence said that she was not going to run for re-election and that she was looking at a governorship or a senatorial bid. And she felt that in the Republican Party, she could not attain those or that position. And so therefore, she's as expedient as any.
You know, rather than focus this on Norm Coleman, but Paul's point about the Republican Party changing, I think that people have a sense of what the Republican Party is.
Catherine, as did the DFL. Mm-hmm. I mean, around the early 70s, prior to that, the DFL party was pro-life. And again, it's my earlier point, the world belongs to those that show up, and activists in both camps kind of gravitated toward these parties and dominated them.
And then we go back to my earlier point, which is, have the two parties polarized so much that people are switching parties simply because they keep trying to find a welcome middle?
Well, the part that's frustrating for me about this, having toiled in the trenches for a while here, is that polarization was much more prevalent 10 years ago than it is now. And that's part of my frustration with both Dean and Judy, is that they are raising issues that have long ago been settled. We have been a Big Ten party for some time.
All right.
The reason that I'm a Republican today, and I was a Republican back in 1980, and those things haven't changed. I think we are taxed way too much. I think government spends way too much money. We have too much government in our lives. We need education reform. And those are the issues that are good in 1980 as well as 1998.
We are talking to Ron Ebensteiner, Minnesota chair of the Republican Party, and to Sarah Janicek, co-editor of the newsletter Politics in Minnesota. We'd like to be talking to you. 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning. We're going to turn now to Patty Marsicano. She's standing by with the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.
Thanks, Catherine. Good morning. President Clinton proposes a $110 billion health care initiative to provide medical coverage to 5 million uninsured Americans. Clinton's proposal includes several measures that Congress has ignored in the past. Officials now say 54 people were injured in the dorm fire at New Jersey's Seton Hall University. 3 people died in the fire. The university has canceled classes for the day. 9 African-American employees at a Mitsubishi plant in Peoria, Illinois, have filed a racial discrimination lawsuit alleging the company unfairly denied them raises, promotion, and job training, subjected them to racial slurs, and gave them the least desirable assignments at the plant. Company spokeswoman Gail O'Brien declined to comment on the lawsuit because she has not seen it, but she says the company does not tolerate discrimination of any kind at the plant. The worsening weather has forced Mesaba Airlines to cancel almost all of its flights from the St. Cloud Airport today. Mesaba manager Tony Rogowski says the visibility is poor and snow is accumulating on the runway. Mesaba operates as Northwest Airlink, shuttling passengers between St. Cloud and Minneapolis-St. Paul International. A winter storm is expected to dump up to 8 inches of snow across southern Minnesota. The state of Minnesota will start cutting financial aid to the 10 school districts that failed to meet last night's midnight deadline to settle teacher contracts. For the Monaga School District in northwestern Minnesota, it'll be a loss of over $18,000. Superintendent Fred Seibert says the school board and teachers are stuck on severance packages and salary, but he says he is optimistic the two sides will reach an agreement with the help of mediators. The Twin Cities metro area forecast for today, there is a winter storm warning in effect. Periods of snow becoming windy this afternoon with blowing and drifting snow. Snow accumulation is expected between 3 and 6 inches. Right now in the Twin Cities, it's snowing and 14 degrees. And that's news.
So you say all your radios are set to Minnesota Public Radio, and you've been quietly listening all day, every day, all these years, without letting anyone know how you feel? Well, now's your chance. Call 1-877-745-8867 and tell us what you love about MPR, your favorite programs, hosts, or personal experiences. Show your love of MPR and give us a ring today at 1-877-745-8867.
I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. We're continuing our conversation about the recent defections of 2 Republicans, State Senator Dean Johnson and State Auditor Judy Dutcher, defecting from the Republican Party to the DFL. We're talking to Ron Ebensteiner, Minnesota Chair of the Republican Party, and to Sarah Janicek, co-editor of the newsletter Politics in Minnesota and founder of the Politics in Minnesota, The Directory. If you'd like to join this conversation, it's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. We're going to go to Harlan in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you, Catherine. I just wanted to suggest that what we're seeing is a continuing polarization of the parties around the so-called social issues. Each party sees itself as responding or reacting to the other party's extreme views in this subject. A gay rights diversity agenda on the Democrat side, the religious conservatism on the Republican side. And my experience was as a first-time caucuser with the Republicans is that the religious conservatives can be very hard to take. I think Sarah might agree with me on this, in that a woman called me at home to ask me that because she hadn't seen me before at a caucus, whether I was, quote, a family man or not, unquote. In other words, she wanted to know if I was gay, was the unmistakable impression. And so I think these people can really push people out of caucuses, which is a close-in, face-to-face meeting situation.
Harlan, I would agree with you to some degree. On the other hand, I would characterize it not so much as the polarization as the marginalization of both parties. Because the parties have declined in power, to be a candidate, you don't have to have the imprimatur of either party. We've seen that over the years. These parties both tend to be dominated by people that care about issues, not necessarily about getting people elected. And good for you, Harlan. That kind of family man question stuff does go on.
And I would simply add that, based on my experience, the vast majority of the activists have their hearts in the right places. They're really good people. They want to make a difference. They want this state to be better. And as I said, the vast majority, there are a certain segment in both parties. It's just not the Republican Party, but the Democratic Party as well, that are very passionate on one or two issues that make it uncomfortable for the rest.
You know, conversely, you talked about the marginalization of the parties, Sarah Janicek. Doug Groh has a really interesting column today, an interview with Alan Quist, in which they put forward this notion that what has happened is that a power broker such as Vin Weber has taken over the Republican Party, and that what you have are people who now are beginning to take over who aren't so much concerned over issues. They want to win, and that one of the reasons Judy Dutcher left is because she had received word she wasn't going anywhere.
First of all, I think if Vin Weber saw that, I'm sure he had a good chuckle. He doesn't perceive himself as a power broker. He's been snubbed in large part of efforts led by Alan Quist. But the interesting part about the Doug Groh column and what's going on with the House Republicans, they're being attacked by the Family Council and the MCCL for not taking on those social issues. It strikes me, anytime you've got right-wing or left-wing groups attacking what you're doing, you're probably in the middle of the road and doing the right thing.
But I want to get back to, you know, Alan Quist saying that power brokers have taken over the party.
I don't agree with that at all. As chairman of the Republican Party, I tried to be very fair with all segments of the party, tried to be very inclusive, tried to include everyone's points of views, and I'm not part of any, you know, power broker group out there. I ran for a state party chair because I wanted to be the majority party here in the state.
We're going to go to Carol in Sauk Center. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. I'm really hoping that these two people pay attention to the feelings that so many of the callers have about the tone of the Republican Party. Indiana Jones said it's not the years, it's the miles. With the Republicans, it's not necessarily the position, but the tone. And as long as they remain sort of mean-spirited and judgmental on these social issues and don't leave wiggle room for other people, they're going to send people away in hordes. Because a group will always be judged by its most extreme and vocal members, and they've made the point it's those who show up that get heard and get the business done. Well, I think the leaders of the Republican Party need to show up and tone some of these people down and say, you know, you have to leave room for people's opinions.
Carol Sarah Janicek here, the moderate. Having defended my party for 40 minutes, let me issue a challenge. One of the ways to stop this perception that our party is too conservative is coming up this summer. We will be electing delegates to the National Convention. We have not had a moderate delegate elected from the Republican Party attend the National Convention since 1988, and I think that would be a wonderful message to send about how the Republican Party is a Big Ten party.
So why would anyone want to show up, though? I mean, my point is, it sounds you're saying, here's a challenge, let's go fight the battle.
Right.
I mean, haven't we discovered that in both parties, people are just throwing in the towel and saying, forget about it.
I think Carol's point was that it's kind of up to party leadership to set the tone, and that's my challenge to Ron
challenge
and the party.
Oh, your challenge is to Ron. Okay, great.
Set that tone.
I think, Carolyn, you're onto something there. By the way, I'm from Sauk Center, Minnesota, so you live in a great little town in Stearns County. But I do think you have a legitimate point. The Republican Party does have to have a tone that is more friendly, more inclusive, and that doesn't mean that we have to diverge from our core principles and beliefs. And if you just go back to Ronald Reagan, he was a master at communicating some very tough issues in the early 1980s, but he did it with a tone that was friendly. And I think the Republican Party has to do a better job of that. I do believe we have the right issues. Now we need to express it more effectively.
We're going to Allison in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. I'm so glad to just put my two cents in about party leadership setting the tone as well, because I do think it's really important right now. I do believe that Vin Weber and Chris Georgakis and a few others are power brokers in this state behind the scenes and are really hurting the party. And I think the party leadership has got to see that. The moderates have left the party, and I'm a moderate, by the way. I'm not a pro-lifer. I really wish that the social issues were out of the party. I believe that the party actually is more in touch with the majority of people in Minnesota, and I wonder sometimes why Democrats continue to vote for the tax and spend people that they choose for the legislature. It just doesn't make any sense to me, because most people are very concerned about their pocketbooks. But I think the values and principles that the Republican Party holds up is sometimes very divisive in the state, and I think it drives people away. I know that many people that I know have given up the fight a long time ago. I know that there is a litmus test to become a delegate. When you're not on the MCCL list, you don't become a delegate to even your own Senate district. But I have stuck with it, and I want to put in a good word for the niche that I found with the Twin Cities Republican Association, which actually ignores the pro-life, pro-choice issues and just concentrates on the tax issues, since we're the third highest state in income taxes in the nation, and with the third highest sales tax in the nation. We feel there's really time to be fiscally conservative, and that should be the dividing line and the issue that the party leadership sets before everything, and not this backroom power broking that's going on right now in the state. And I think that's probably what Judy Dutcher left the party for. I mean, frankly, I was glad when Dean Johnson left. He was not in step with the Republicans. And the Star Tribune actually put in an article the other day in an editorial of theirs that he was tight with the public purse and moderate on most issues.
Allison, take a breath, Allison. I want to give Ron and Sarah a chance to respond here. Thanks.
Well, I just don't know where this idea of power brokering comes from. I haven't seen it, and I'm the party chair. I probably have had maybe one or two conversations with Vin Weber since I've been elected state party chair. I have probably had only one conversation with Chris Georgakis during that period of time. I don't know how these two folks or other folks are controlling the party. I ran as for state party chair because I wanted to make the Republican Party the majority party here in the state. And so I'm confused.
Allison, a very quick response. Okay. Allison did take a breath. Sarah Janicek?
Just briefly, I agree with much of what Allison said. Good for you for toiling in the trenches in South Minneapolis Republican politics. It's not easy. But also, again, back to the point of there are different forms of what Republicans are doing, and I think we need to go back to what happened when the House went Republican the last election. They did not focus on social issues. They focused on bread-and-butter issues.
We're going to go to Mike in Rochester. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. My point is that I don't think the Republican Party is really getting off that far off a base from what's being said in the news, because, I mean, I don't see them doing anything differently from when they ran for office in the last election. And, you know, I think that just shows right there that, by you know, they had issues they ran on and they were voted for by a majority and put into office. I mean, I think that shows right there that a majority of people in Minnesota support them. And as far as what Judy is doing, I think she's just pulling a Pat Buchanan on the party. You know, she doesn't have the power she wants there, so she's going to go where she can get it.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Sarah Janicek, quickly.
Lost my thought. We'll hand it over to Ron.
Okay.
Well said.
Oh, the two of you. Okay. We're going to go now to Karen Louise Booth has rung up. She's the communications director for the DFL. Welcome to Mid-Morning, Karen.
Good morning, Catherine. I'm enjoying listening to the show. I want to say hello to Sarah again and say that I'm enjoying listening to the two of these leaders in the Republican Party do a lot of good work and PR for the DFL today, because one of two things is going on. They're in either complete denial or they really just don't get it. And I know that, Sarah, you have been among those in the GOP who have fought the good fight. I know that you're a moderate, and having covered both parties and certainly having been critically evaluating both parties over the years as a reporter, I know that you have expressed the same frustrations that many people like Dean Johnson and Judy Dutcher have expressed in the last couple of days. I just want to say that the DFL party is truly the party of the big tent, and not the pup tent of the Republican Party. And I think that unless some things really change in the GOP, I think you're going to probably see more defections of Republican voters to the DFL as well. So I want to thank both of you for doing a good PR job for the DFL today.
Karen Louise Booth, congratulations. You have effectively made the step from a nonpartisan NPR reporter to partisan DFL activist. Congratulations. And I'm glad that you called in with what you said, because if there is any message that I would like to send to Ron and my more conservative colleagues, is that look what this does when we're not emitting positive, inclusive messages. It gives the DFL this automatic huge issue, and they can make great hay of it, as Karen just did.
I have a question. Has this prompted any soul-searching in the Republican Party at all? Because I'm not necessarily hearing that.
Well, I have been working since my election in recruiting good mainstream candidates to run for public office at the legislative level, state senate, and I think that if we have the right message, as exemplified by the action of the House Republicans in the last legislative session, I think what they were able to accomplish is it will be very helpful for us in the next election. And if we continue working hard at recruiting mainstream candidates who can appeal to 50%+ of the voters out there, we will become the majority party. I don't believe it's the message. The one thing that I do think that we have to be very concerned about, and something that I want to work very hard on, and that's the tone. George W. Bush, with his compassionate conservative, I think he's doing just the, you know, now I'm state party chair, so I have to remain neutral, but his message of compassionate conservative is really resonating well, and that's why he's doing so well nationally. You can talk about the tough issues, but you have to do it in a friendly sort of way, and in the tone that invites people in. And that's the Republican Party has to do a better job of, and I will make sure that we will continue with that effort.
We're talking to Ron Ebensteiner. He's the chair of the Minnesota Republican Party, and we're talking to Sarah Janicek. She's co-editor of the newsletter Politics in Minnesota. We're talking about the defection within the last week of both State Auditor Judy Dutcher and State Senator Dean Johnson moving from the Republican Party to the DFL. It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. We're going to go to Tom Kelly in St. Paul. We have a lot of DFLers calling up for some reason. Tom Kelly, you are the former DFL communications director.
Yes, I am. All right. I want to say hello to Sarah.
Morning, Tom.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. The comment the comment that I'd like to make is, after the 98 election, the DFL went through some soul-searching and started some implementing some reforms that I think the Republican Party is going to need to do as well.
You could be right, Tom. Anytime the DFL gets 28% in a statewide election, you got a lot of soul searching to do. We did not do that because for the first time in a dozen years, we captured the Minnesota House, and we were fairly happy. And our candidate fell behind Jesse just by a couple of points. It will be interesting, Tom, to see what the great DFL experiment in Saturday caucuses turns out this year. I had a conversation with your chairman a week ago, and you're expecting a large turnout. I'm of the belief that the caucus system needs to be substantially overhauled and that it's a dead system.
We keep talking about the two parties. And, Tom Kelly, I wouldn't mind hearing what you have to say about this as well. What do these defections mean for the Reform Party? There have been a lot of people pointing out that, gee, there was a alternative here between Republican and DFL, and that was the Reform Party. Tom Kelly, quickly.
I think that Dane Smith laid it out nicely in the Star Tribune today. It was a missed opportunity for the Reform Party, and it's a net gain for the DFL, not just in members, but in being the majority party.
All right.
Well, with again, I read Dane Smith's column and this morning, and this is the Reform Party is the party of Jesse Ventura, and that's it.
I agree, and I feel badly for folks that are toiling in the trenches trying to build a party. I've attended their conventions, and they've got a large task ahead of them.
We're going to go to Lisa in Shoreview. Welcome to Mid Morning.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment. I'm hearing a lot about the polarization and all those things, and all the comments are very interesting. And I just wanted to go back to, I think, Ms. Janicek made a comment about how the Republican Party followed, you know, a more mainstream sort of a platform last year. But there was one issue called the profile of learning, and the Republican stance against it was largely led by the far-right conservative part of the Republican Party. And then on the other side, you had the Chamber of Commerce and the Business Partnership wanting to keep the standards and supporting it. And since they're all part of the same party, I don't know how you reconcile that. But the last year, it was a repeal or no deal stance, and it was a Republican Party stance. And when I read the paper on the platform for this year, I didn't see that mentioned. But I find it interesting, even within the Republican Party, on the issue of education, there's a huge polarization as far as what people are wanting. I wanted some comment on that.
On that issue, I agree. There are interest groups that are on both sides of that issue. But what I viewed at the Capitol, and I don't focus on education issues, is that parents were all over the map on that issue. It was tough to ideologically peg people on that one.
We're going to go to Jeff in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'd like to just weigh in on Vin Weber. As far as people having the perception that he's a power broker, I think that's very much attributable to the fact that he was consulted by Newt Gingrich when they wrote the Contract for America, and that his participation was publicized quite a bit, and as a result, people perceived him to be a power broker and very active in Republican politics.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff, that's a great point. I think we do have kind of a Vin Weber hangover. I mean, it should be pointed out, Vin Weber is off making over seven figures a year, sitting on major corporate boards and lobbying in Washington. I'm sure he'd get a real bang out of the thought that he's a power broker in Minnesota.
We're going to go to Joe in Plymouth. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Joe.
Love your show.
Thank you.
My question revolves around Jason Lewis's comments last night and a couple nights before that regarding the media bias towards the Democrat. The two callers ago made a mention of the fact that she said, oh, and that wasn't even mentioned. So I guess I'd like just to have both of you say a quick word on what do you think are Minneapolis and St. Paul papers and television, probably not you guys, but bias towards the Democratic side. Is that true? And if so, why is the Republican Party not taking a more aggressive approach?
Joe, link this up to Judy Dutcher for me. We're talking about defections from the party. Are you saying that you think the media had a hand in that?
I don't believe that the media had a hand in that. I believe that the media might not necessarily be giving us the whole story.
I guess Jason flags for me the point I tried to make earlier, in that when Norm defected, there was no Star Tribune editorial lambasting the DFL. And it's very predictably when Judy and Dean defected, we had editorials lambasting the GOP.
There is a definite bias, in particular with the Minneapolis Star and Tribune. The editorial board is almost the house organ for the DFL party. I have said that. I will continue saying that. And I think that for the Republican Party to get a break from the Star and Tribune is too much to ask from those folks. And I think it's very unfortunate that we have a paper here in the metropolitan area who is so heavily biased toward one political party. They are in the business of reporting objective news and to be fair and square, and they are not.
We'll have to go back and do a search after the show, Sarah Janicek. I find it hard to believe there weren't any editorials after Norm made his switch.
Catherine, I'll bet you dinner there was nothing lambasting the DFL.
Ooh, I think I'll have salmon. Okay, we're going to go to Dave in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yes, I'm interested in the your guest's reaction to what I think one of the points in all of this is that what we're learning is the importance for balance. The at least perceived criticism of the Republican Party is that it's too narrow, and I think the failure of the Reform Party to attract any of these defectors is that it is all over the map. And so it could be that the real lesson is that the party has to, every party needs to strike a balance. If you're too narrow, then you exclude, but if you're too broad, then you don't really stand for anything. I do agree that the Reform Party is mostly centered around the personality of Jesse Ventura. Other than that, I don't think most people have any idea what the Reform Party stands for. I appreciate the comments in reaction to that.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right. For us to be the majority party, we have to appeal to 50%+ of the voters out there. And that's what we're working to do, and that's why we took control of the House, and we have to speak to those bread and butter issues that 50% plus will vote for our candidates.
We're going to go to Kurt in Minneapolis. Kurt, you're going to have to be quick.
Hello.
Hello.
My comment is I'm glad Judy Dutcher came over. I've always kind of liked her, and I think the Republican Party is becoming more and more marginalized. I think they're going to go the way of the Whig Party. Their lack of tolerance just turns everybody off. Pretty soon there's going to be four people left in that party. And a quick comment on the Reform Party. What it stands for to me is social, liberal, and fiscal conservative.
All right. Thanks, Kurt.
But I would ask is who controls the Minnesota House? It's the Republican Party. They took control. So the message that Steve Swigum and Tim Pawlenty and all the other legislators, what they ran on, a fiscal conservative sort of approach to government, is well received.
Just a quick point on the lack of tolerance. I think a point we have not spoken to is that both, Ron Ebensteiner, our party chair, our Speaker of the House, Steve Swigum, and our Senate Minority Leader, Dick Day, are all recruiting candidates for the legislature that can best be elected in their districts. And because we're a diverse state in Minnesota, some of those candidates are gay, some of those candidates are lesbian, those candidates are pro-choice, they're pro-life, they're all over the map, they represent Minnesota.
All right. We are going to have to conclude this hour of spirited discussion. Ron Ebensteiner, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Ron Ebensteiner is chair of the Minnesota Republican Party. Sarah Janicek, thanks for coming by today.
I'll have a steak.
She is co-editor of the newsletter Politics in Minnesota, and she's founder of Politics in Minnesota, The Directory. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio.